On the weekend panel this morning, Linda Clark, the well-known former broadcaster, now a law partner at Dentons Kensington Swan. Morena, Linda.
Morning.
And Mike Williams, the former Labour Party President and Chief Executive of the Howard League for Penal Reform. Kia ora, Mike.
Kia ora.
We've got you both. Well, our COVID chat panellists won't be that cheerful, so we'll kick things off with a poem from a listener named Maria. Delta Dawn, she calls it. Delta Dawn, what's that mask that you have on? Could it be an outbreak of the Delta strain? And did I hear you say you're staying home today so we can all be COVID-free again? Thank you, Maria. Well done. Panelists, 82 cases yesterday, still rising. Linda, both of you, but how are you both finding lockdown? Which way do you think this is heading? Still up or not?
Yeah, possibly still up today and tomorrow, I suppose. Look, I'm not an epidemiologist. How's it going? It's pretty grim, isn't it? I mean, it's depressing, it's hard, it's frustrating. But I urge anyone who's, you know, kind of down in the dumps about it to read the column in this morning's paper by Lloyd Burr, who's, of course, the TV3's Europe correspondent back in New Zealand. I mean, it's a fantastic column because it reminds us we live in a world where this is a dreadful virus and it's affecting people all around the world, and we are luckier than almost everybody else. So, yep, this is a blip. Fingers crossed, you know, all of the scientists who are working so hard on this will have got it right, and we can, in fact, bend the curve and bring it back under control. And while people like Michael Baker are optimistic, I'm optimistic because they're the people who really know this stuff.
Although I see a headline on Stuff this morning as well. I haven't read Lloyd Burr's piece, but there's a Stuff headline: COVID among essential workers could spell end of elimination strategy. But do we have that option? Mike, what's your view on where we are?
Well, I woke up early and I've read both the big morning papers, and there's really mixture there. I'm with Linda. We are not following the trajectory that has taken New South Wales so badly by storm. And I'm hoping in the next few days we will see a flattening and then a curve down, because I think we are all doing the right things. And I'm delighted to see the new police commissioner cracking down on people who aren't sticking by the rules. So I think we're pretty well doing it. We know how to do it. We've done it before. This is definitely a much more challenging version of COVID. But, if we've done it once, we can do it again.
This idea of an alert level 4+, I mean, not that it's been called that, but the idea that we should stay at level 4, but even more rigorously, and I suppose the police presence would be a large component of that strategy, Mike.
I think so. It's difficult to work out how you could be much more stringent. You know, I've been talking to a very, very old friend in Sydney, and their idea of a lockdown is vastly different to ours. For example, IKEA was still open in Sydney. And I said, why is that? Well, apparently furniture is an essential supply. I mean, surely you could put off buying your own couch. And I think the New South Wales, they really are the victims of their own strategy. I mean, I watch Australian television quite a bit, even more so during lockdown. And up to now, Gladys Berejiklian has been the hero of the right-wing TV channels for being, you know, not fast and hard, but slow and soft. Well, look at the result of that. We're getting it right.
I forgot to ask you at the top, because I was trying to extricate myself from some wires and such and was distracted, for a highlight and a low light from both of you for the past week. Linda, what's been on your mind?
Oh, look, COVID's on my mind, so highlights and lowlights are really hard for me. But it was lovely to wake up this morning to the news about Lisa Adams, wasn't it? I mean, that's a pretty cool story. And that she's Valerie's sister and Valerie trains her is just amazing. So, I mean, I think that's great. The upside of the lockdown, if there is one, and I mean, I know that I'm lucky, you know, I've got a nice house and, work goes on, so there's some upsides in that sense. But one of the great things about lockdown, and it was the same last time, is that opportunity to just sort of walk quiet streets and hear the birds. I mean, I live not far from the Karori bird sanctuary. So, you know, we've got a garden that's full of tui and kaka and kakapo and keraru. And, you know, that's the opportunity to just be in your house a little bit and, you know, as the old cliche goes, smell the roses, is something that we don't do very often, and this gives us an opportunity to do it.
The kakapo will come, Linda.
Gosh, I mean, it's a fantastic sanctuary, Jim, but maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, we'll see. It's a long walk for them.
Mike, what's been on your mind? Do you want to report anything to us?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I had a really big highlight. As you're aware, the Howard League has been running a driver's licensing program that is aimed at recently released prisoners. And the objective of that is to give them the ability to get jobs, because if you get a job, your chances of reoffending are a lot less. Now, we funded it ourselves out of philanthropy starting in 2014, but in 2017, we got Provincial Growth Fund money for it. Now, that runs out in December, and we were going to be left high and dry having, you know, highly trained tutors who have a 90% pass rate, and having reached over 10,000 licences, and with a majority of them are actually young Maori just out of jail. The problem was that the funding, ongoing funding, fell between transport, corrections, MSD and police, and no one could agree on who was going to carry on funding. Well, on Friday, I finally got the good news that the transport agency is going to fund us for at least the first 6 months of next year, while a formal budget bid is put. So that is very good news indeed.
Yeah, well done, Mike. And you always have a good report out of the Howard League. It's 9:15. Linda and Mike with us on the weekend panel, and I will get on to other topics, but COVID is a pretty dominating one at the moment. If masks, if you're a police officer with a beard and there are no religious reasons why you have a beard, should you be expected to shave it off during lockdown so you can wear a mask and be on the front line like your colleagues? What do you both think, Linda?
You know, I don't really have a view on this, which is rare because I have a view on most things. But, you know, but the thing I think about those our police officers on the front line, and we look overseas and see what's happened there, and those riot, you know, protests in Melbourne and Sydney a couple of weeks ago or a week or so ago. those young, mainly police officers, are really out there and amongst it. And I would think that if I was a serving officer at the moment, or I was the partner of a serving officer or the mother of a serving officer, I'd want to make sure that the mask on my son or daughter fitted the best it possibly could. So I think that if the medical advice was that to get a good fitting mask, you don't need, you know, you ought not to have a beard, then the sensible thing is to get rid of the beard for a short period of time. I mean, having said that, I live with a man with a beard, and if you asked Alan to cut off his beard, he'd have very strong views on it. So I get it. But I just want our police officers to be safe. I want our supermarket workers to be safe. I want, you know, the people that have to go door to door to do caring to be safe. And that should be our starting point with every decision we make at the moment.
Mike, are you agreeing with Linda on this as well?
Absolutely agree with Linda. Now, look, there are some things about beards. A, they are optional. You can take them off and they'll come back. Now, I've spent some of my life wearing a beard, but I think under these circumstances, unless you've got a religious objection, as I understand Greek Orthodox priests are expected to wear beards, I think they should have a shave. And I note that the police commissioner, Andrew Costa, did have a beard before he was police commissioner. But I can tell you, during the last lockdown, I decided what a wonderful time to grow a beard. But that lasted about 2 days because I realised I was going to morph into the kind of grey beard loon that's mentioned in the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. So I flagged it away pretty quickly.
Surely not.
Oh, yes.
Send us a photo and we'll all decide.
Oh, no.
Continuing with COVID, Scott Morrison, as we know, likened our lockdown to the movie The Croods.
Some wanted to stay in the cave, and that young girl, she wanted to go out and live again and deal with the challenges of living in a different world.
So which crude are you? Are you Grug, you know, the caveman who wants to stay in the cave? Are you Eep, the cave girl who wants to find the land of tomorrow? Which crude are you both, please, in terms of ongoing?
I think comments by people like Scott Morrison and other overseas commentators who various media outlets have chosen to publish in the last week, and some of our own commentators actually, are very critical of the New Zealand strategy because of their politics and not because of the science. I mean, leaders like Scott Morrison, if the New Zealand strategy works, and as I said at the beginning, you know, as long as people like Michael Baker, who is, you know, trained in this, in the science of this stuff, as long as they're optimistic, I'm optimistic. If it works, people like Scott Morrison will have to speak up to their own populations and explain why a whole lot of people needlessly died, because that is the consequence of the so-called Plan B. And if you look at those countries overseas that are, you know, the sort of cliche of the moment is living with it, they're living with it, but a whole lot of people in their countries are dying with it. So, you know, there's the number of deaths in countries like Australia, the UK, that those numbers are as high now as they were in April in some parts of the US and in some parts of other countries. In the UK, they had 140 deaths yesterday or the day before, 1,200 deaths in the United States 2 days ago, and of course in New South Wales 2 days yesterday, and 1,000, more than 1,000 cases. So I think there's a really deep and pretty cynical strand of politics around a lot of the criticism about New Zealand's strategy. Now, you can criticise how it's being implemented. It can be improved, absolutely. I'm not arguing about that. But the politics of this is messy, right? Because as I said, the living with it strategy means that some people don't. And you just have to look around you and think, okay, if we lived with this, if we let it in, if we give up like other countries have, I mean, Boris Johnson just got bored with it. If we get bored with it and we want to do what Boris Johnson has done and what Scott Morrison's now talking about, which of us in our community are you willing to sacrifice? Is it Nana? Is it Granddad? Is it your auntie? Actually, it's not going to be just old people, because at the moment in Australia, in New South Wales hospitals, there's a whole lot of young people under the age of 9. So your nephew, your daughter, your son, that's the question here. And those columnists that are constantly on about this just simply don't want to face up with that. And I get, and added to that, I put up David Seymour, who yesterday talked about the fact we can't eliminate any longer. Well, we actually can stay with the strategy, and we are, and New Zealanders have got a good sense of this, and that's why they're following the rules by and large.
Okay, there's always politics, and the politics... Oops. The politics is linked with economic and fiscal concerns as well. And we've got the prospect of layoffs, Mike, haven't we, in big industries like logging, and it's going to bite soon in terms of mental health. There are all these factors in play. What is your view about the cave versus the outside world?
Well, I'm sort of leaning towards Ep Crude, who wants to find the land of tomorrow, but just not yet. I mean, this is a really rapidly developing situation, and things are changing quite rapidly. For example, I got my jab about 3 weeks ago, and I was called in by the DHB. Now, my wife got hers last week by just going down to the GP, and a doctor I spoke to said, oh, well, we've discovered that this vaccine can stay out of the deep freeze for much longer than we thought. That's why the GPs can do it. So, you know, this is a developing situation, and I do think we've got to stay the course. Scott Morrison is in trouble. He has favoured the soft lockdown approach that Gladys Berejiklian has practised so disastrously in New South Wales. He's been advocating that for quite a while, despite the fact the states that implemented hard lockdowns, West Australia and Queensland, their governments were returned with incredible majorities. In the West Australian Parliament, there are now, after the election, only 2 Liberal MPs. And so I think Scott Morrison is on the wrong side of history with this. And I think it showed up in the news poll last week, which showed Albanese's ALP with a 6-point lead. So I think politically, he's getting it wrong.
Okay, let's bring it back home. Rapid antigen saliva testing. Daniel Elliott's the president and CEO of Inova Medical Group, which has delivered about 1 billion rapid tests to the UK. He told Checkpoint it lets communities open up with confidence.
And so what this type of test actually does is it's really screening for people that have a viral load that is contagious or infectious to others.
The Director of Public Health, Carolyn McIlnay, said we haven't yet provided a conclusion. The evidence is emerging around the world, but we continue to keep a close eye on things. So is that good enough? I mean, happy for that dialogue to start, says the Prime Minister. But the dialogue did begin last year, and the Ministry of Health isn't entering it, says the Waipareta Trust. Should we be having this kind of testing by now, Mike?
Well, we have got it with the Waipareta Trust. There is absolutely nothing to stop you going online and buying this stuff and getting it delivered. But I would point out that we've been served very well by a very conservative health department. And the answer they gave is that, yes, it's getting better and better in terms of saliva testing, in terms of proof, but it's yet to achieve Federal Drug Administration approval in the United States. And that is the gold standard. So I think we should just hang in a bit longer and see if it works with places like Waipareta Trust.
Linda, what's your view on it?
I think we will. I don't know. I mean, again, I want to take my advice from the scientists and not from the people who are selling the product. I mean, one of the problems with something like this, and we all fall a victim to it, is, you know, we all want this to be fixed. We're all sick of it. We all want a quick solution. And Delta is smarter than us, and it's smarter than that, and it doesn't allow that. So, I mean, I would have liked our vaccination program to be rolled out more quickly. I would like our testing and tracing to have been beefed up more quickly. But even if we'd done that, that wouldn't have allowed any of us out of the cave, to use Scott Morrison's analogy, because if we go right back to basics, it's a lot of the New Zealand strategy is driven correctly, in my view, by realizing that we've got such a limited capacity in ICU beds. So, I mean, I had a look at this yesterday, because this is the foundation stone on which everything else kind of sits, really. We have 4.6 ICU beds for every 100,000 New Zealanders. Now, in the UK, they have 6.4. In Australia, they have 8.9. In Germany, they have 38.7. Now, the UK's ICU beds were overrun by the first stage of COVID. And as we know, Delta has twice the rate of hospitalisation as the first wave of Delta. Quite frankly, we don't have enough ICU beds. And yes, we can be critical of the Ministry of Health and DHBs for not beefing them up. They have actually, since last year, the rate was much lower. We had about 200 less beds in April last year. But each of those beds costs about $1 million a year. And every nurse who works with a bed, and they need nurses sitting by the bed 24/7, takes 5 years to train. So we can decide today we need more ICU beds, but we can't just magic them up. And so I think there's so many different parts in this, aren't there, Jim? And they're all complicated, and they all fit together.
Okay, one more question as part of it before I ask you about other things in the time we've got left. As part of a sterner strategy, given that MIQs in the middle of town are not ideal, do you both think it's not too late to be building big centres for everyone coming in, single storey, lots of ventilation? We're told that the big one in the Northern Territory doesn't tend to leak COVID. Mike, what's your view about what we should do if we can't flatten this curve?
I think we'll come to this. I, when I was a student, I did a bit of a study of the Spanish flu pandemic in 1918, and that was very interesting. It was actually handled by local government, and there was quite a lot of variation that you could learn from. For example, Auckland at that time was a whole lot of boroughs, and it handled it very differently and did very badly. Christchurch was united and had a lockdown and had a much lower death rate. So you can learn from that. But what I noted is that virtually every town and city had a remote quarantine station. There was an island off Dunedin, which is still called Quarantine Island. There is, of course, Soames Island in Wellington. I couldn't locate the one, but there will be one somewhere in Auckland. And I think we will go back to that kind of remote quarantining when we get back to near normal, for at least for overseas visitors coming in.
Okay.
Which Before is kind we of the go, plan, because... right? Because that's kind of the plan. That's what the Professor Stegg's plan is, that you kind of do it over time and you have different levers on the border. And Brian Roche, who's advising the government, has talked about having a standalone agency rather than government, the Ministry of Health doing it. And that's probably where we're going to end up. That's probably a good place to end.
Okay. The place we'll end is the situation in Afghanistan and Joe Biden's speech after the explosions at the airport, which we don't have, but he said we will not forgive.
We will not forget. We will hunt you down and make you pay.
Which they've begun to do. How, though, from now on, do you reckon? Just quick thoughts. I mean, in a way that once again commits America to a costly long-term strategy, do you see much logic in what, or hope for what Biden hopes for yourself?
No, I don't.
No, what a shambles. It's awful.
He's promoting drone attacks against these fragments of ISIS and that sort of thing. I just don't think that's going to work. I think it's just an awful shambles, and I agree with Linda.
Linda, last word.
Oh, it's awful. I hope that, we don't know yet how many Afghan people New Zealand might be helping to bring out, but I really hope that we take as many as we can, particularly those families that have helped New Zealand while we've been over there.